The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good evening and welcome back. And before I start on my piece of the class, if you have any questions you want to take this time, some of you have been meditating at home and have any questions about your experience or something about the instructions from last week that you'd like clarification or anything, or some report. Sometimes it's nice to hear a little report of how it's going with meditation, if you have anything you want to say. Is there anything anybody would like to bring up as a way of starting?
I had one question, which is, again, a question about the posture. So, is it okay to use like a different kind of posture on different days, or should we try to get to one best posture? Or can we use a chair one day and kneel the other day and sit on the floor the other day?
Yeah, it's a good question. Meditation can be done really in almost any posture. And the answer to many questions in this tradition here is to do that which is most useful, that which is most helpful. So for some people, it might be helpful to vary their posture. There's some issue in their body, and using the same posture all the time just aggravates some condition. And so it's good to change a lot. Some people find it useful to stick to the same posture and stay with it for a number of reasons. One reason is useful is that people have a tendency of avoiding discomfort. And so... if every time you're a little bit uncomfortable in your posture, you shift, you might be comfortable for the time being, but a person doesn't work through the discomfort, doesn't work through the issues that come up with the discomfort. And that's a second reason to stay in one posture. If you take basically a good aligned posture, the body slowly over time will adjust to it. And people who sit a lot have developed, sometimes it's called a yogic body, and it relaxes and opens and settles into that body. So after a while, the posture becomes a refuge. The posture becomes a support because you're used to it, and it's easier to get into the meditation because of familiarity and the ease and the subtleness that the posture has come with the posture over time. So if you're always changing, you won't get, your body won't settle into it as well. Because I relate to the other thing about discomfort, It's relatively common for people, especially who are new, to be uncomfortable in their body. I bet a lot of you, maybe especially sitting on the floor, maybe you are uncomfortable. It's often good to work through that discomfort, both because it begins opening up the body and changes something in the body, but because the body is connected to the mind. And as the body opens up and settles in, something begins working itself in the mind as well, freeing itself in the mind. So it's a good thing to do. But each person has to decide for themselves what is useful and what is not.
And I had one thing to share, which was just that in the last week, one of the things that kept happening was when something happened with the body, I thought to myself, is this a strong enough thing to move from my breath and think about posture, or should I stay with the breath? And it wasn't. So I often, most of the days, I didn't manage to meditate on posture or body at all, because I just said, okay, it's not enough of a...
Great. And that worked fine for you, and you were able to settle into the breath that way?
I was, except there was a lot of time I think I spent questioning whether I should or not. That took a lot of my time.
It's generally not useful here to spend a lot of time questioning. So it doesn't really matter that much, enough to spend a lot of time questioning. Just flip your mental coin if you can't decide. Or one of the defaults is if you can't decide, don't spend any time thinking about it, just stay with the breath. And stay with the breath until it's glaringly obvious that something else needs attention. So anything else? It all seems very clear to everybody. Yes, please.
Wait for the mic. I meditate early in the morning before the rest of my family gets up, but occasionally my 9-year-old son will get up and he'll decide he has to have a hug, so he'll come over and it breaks the meditation, but it's absolutely wonderful to hug my 9-year-old son very mindfully.
Right. Beautiful. That's lovely. And I trust that it's also a nice influence on a young child to feel that while you're meditating, you're open and receptive. That meditation doesn't shut you out from them, but actually, maybe you're actually more huggable. When my son was really young, like, I don't know, 2 or 3, he would sometimes wake up early when I was meditating, and so I would, you know, the usual thing, the ideal I had, the romantic ideal was that he would come and sit on my lap, and I had a blanket on, I'd put the blanket over him, and he would be all cozy and nice and quiet, and I would continue meditating. So I'd invite him to sit on my lap and put the blanket around him, and it would last about a second. And then I had to get up and make breakfast, and So today the topic is emotions. So what we do in mindfulness meditation is that we are learning how to be present for what is in our experience, and to learn to be present in such a way that that we're not in conflict with what's coming up, or we're not involved in strong desire wanting to fix something or wanting to be different, but learn a kind of a balanced, relaxed attention where we can be balanced and relaxed in the midst of whatever is happening. Some people have a strong expectation that meditation should always be calm, relaxed, peaceful. Some people have even higher standards of bliss, rapture, floating on white clouds, great white light. You know, there's a lot of ideals people have. And all those experiences can happen in meditation, and they certainly can be nice sometimes when they happen. But it isn't so much that we're looking for those experiences, we are learning through the mindfulness to be free, at ease, in whatever experience we have. And so the experience of being uncomfortable is a great teacher for us, because when things are uncomfortable, whether it's physically or emotionally, we often have strong habitual reactions and belief systems about how we should be and what shouldn't be around those. And so to learn how to stay relaxed, at ease, and just be present for that is one of the great lessons of meditation. You learn to do it in meditation, it's a great support for the rest of your life. In meditation, you might be able to, if you're uncomfortable, you can get up and make yourself a sandwich if you want, or something. But if you decide to stay in there when it gets uncomfortable, you'll learn about yourself. You'll learn about what your common reactions are to discomfort, how you maybe run away, or you attack, or you get angry, or you get sad, or get discouraged. There's all kinds of reactions we have. And if you can learn not to succumb to those and learn to stay balanced and present in those, that will translate into being able to do that in challenging situations in your life. Situations where maybe you can't leave. You can't go make yourself a sandwich. You have to just kind of, you know, be with it. And so, yes, officer. You know, yes, officer. I understand, officer. You know, maybe it's a good time to kind of stay balanced and relaxed and not kind of give in to, you know, whatever your strong feelings are. Yes, officer. I don't know if that's the best example, but there are times. So, and what we say in Buddhism, we say that if you want to be free, you're not free if you're only free when you're comfortable. So you have to also learn how to be free when you're uncomfortable. So in meditation, you know, it's a part of, if those are interested in this, it's part of learning both the benefits, the beautiful experiences of meditation, the calm, the peace that can happen, but not to shy away from the discomfort that happens. In fact, not only to shy away with it, but realize that some of the deepest peace you can experience will only be experienced if you work through some of the challenging things that come up when you're meditating. And generally, the challenging things that come up, some of the most challenging things come up, it's often good to see it as unresolved issues that you have, unresolved, unworked out emotions or reactions, responses, beliefs that are coming into play. And so it's an opportunity to work through these things and somehow come to the other side or come to some deeper understanding. So with emotions, It's the same thing with last week we talked about the body. We stay with the breath. The breath is our anchor, is our home base. Meditating on the breath, coming back to the breath whenever we can. But if there's an emotion which is strong, then the instructions are to let go of the breath and do mindfulness of emotions. Bring your attention to the emotions. And to do it without being for or against the emotion. And that's the art of this kind of meditation, is how can you be present for something without being caught up in for or against? For because, oh, this is great. And against, you know, I can't handle this. In deeper meditation, even the for is important because occasionally meditation can get really quiet and peaceful, and the mind might get really still and quiet, and lo and behold, your mind is not thinking at all, and it's so great. And then you get excited. This is great. I have to tell someone. And you can feel yourself popping up, you know, out of it, and because of the excitement to what's happening. And the idea is to learn how to be able to be, you know, at ease with whatever's going on. So I'll tell one story from the time of the Buddha, and then we'll do a meditation. It's a story of a man was talking to the Buddha, and the Buddha said to him, if a person is struck by an arrow, would that be painful? You know, if the archer kind of releases the arrow and zaps him. And the answer was, you know, the person who's listening said, yeah, it'd be painful to be hit by an arrow, pierced by an arrow. And the Buddha said, if a second arrow was shot and pierced the man, would that be even more painful? Oh yes, being struck by two arrows is even more painful. And then the Buddha said, In the same way, or similar to this, what happens to you in your life, the discomforts, the pains, the challenges, oftentimes are just what life brings you. But sometimes there's a second arrow. And that second arrow is something that you shot. And that's what you have some ability to resolve, work with, learn not to shoot those arrows. So what this means is that if I'm walking down the street here, and I trip on the sidewalk. So that's the first arrow. It's unfortunate I fall and scrape my knee. That's the first arrow. The second arrow might be something like, Gil, you're the worst walker in the world. I don't know if you should be allowed to walk. And after all, I'm a meditation teacher. I'm supposed to be mindful. And now I better make sure no one's watched me. If someone has seen me as a mindfulness teacher having tripped on the sidewalk, I better go figure out a really good way to explain myself. And I'm not just a second arrow, it's like a third and fourth arrow. And then I think, well, I shouldn't be doing this, you know, I should be better and more relaxed about it. I've been doing this practice for so long. I'm just a failure, I can't do this. And I really need to probably do therapy, but I can't afford therapy because my parents didn't give me the right job, they didn't give me the right training and schooling, and so I didn't get that job. That training, and so I couldn't get that job. I couldn't make a lot of money. I can't afford therapy. I need to figure out something for my life. I'm a disaster. This is terrible. What should I do? Now we're like 97th arrow. and then finally I'm sitting there and I think, you know, I've heard that meditation is good. And then I sit there, oh, I'm meditating. The mind can go on these byways and, you know, highways of thoughts and reactions, sending arrow after arrow after arrow. It isn't just two arrows. But the idea is that we react, we respond, we judge, we criticize, we do all these things that are not inherent in the situation, but have to do with our response. I think one of the really good examples of this that kind of gets the point, perhaps, is being really impatient at a traffic light for it to turn green. And maybe you feel tense, you feel almost agitation in your body, and who are you going to blame for how uncomfortable you feel? The light? The traffic engineers, the other traffic, you know, you have to take, that's clearly your responsibility that you're kind of caught up and tense. I mean, who else is going to tense you up? So the second arrow. So one of the things to pay attention to in meditation is there can be things that are uncomfortable, and it can be that things are not going the way you want. Maybe you had the idea you would sit down and bliss out within 20 seconds. And you didn't bliss out the whole sitting. And so that's the first arrow you didn't bliss out. And then comes the anger. I'm a failure, I can't do this, or whatever. Or some people try harder. I'm going to sit here another time, I'm going to really bear down. And there are people who meditate and get headaches when they try too hard. I'm really going to get this. And we had recently someone on a retreat who had a really nice meditation experience a year ago. And he came back on a meditation retreat and he was determined to have the same experience again. And mostly he got the headache. You know, he tried and tried and tried. And, you know, and I kept trying to tell him, it doesn't work that way. You can't try to make the same experience again. And he was so kind of attached to this idea that he wouldn't listen to me. And, you know, it was very hard for him. So to pay attention to meditation, how you react, what your response is, what your relationship is, can you sit there with whatever's coming up and not add a second arrow? Just let it be, this is how it is. And then continue the mindfulness practice, paying attention, being present for what is. Does that make some sense? Okay. So with that, we're going to just do a little sitting. So take a upright, alert, relaxed posture. And then before doing anything else now, with your eyes closed, if you can check in with yourself and then see how you're feeling. What emotional state do you have? What mood? How are you now? Attitude, emotional state, mood that you're in. And the idea in mindfulness is that whatever way you are is okay. It's all okay. Your job is just to be present and see it, recognize this is how it is. And then as you're feeling how you feel, how you are, is there any second arrows, are there any judgments, any ideas, attitudes about how you're feeling that are operating? And if there are, maybe you can put them aside, just a little bit to the side, and try to feel how you are independent of your attitude about it, judgments about it, ideas about it, just the simplicity of how you're feeling, as if it's, you have complete permission to feel this way. And sometimes it's useful at the beginning of meditation to check in with how you're feeling, because sometimes certain emotional states can color our attitude about the meditation practice. And if you acknowledge it, maybe it's less likely to color it, less likely to influence you unconsciously. So to begin a period of meditation, it's useful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, let your rib cage stretch and open, expand. And as you exhale, relax. Gently settle into your body. Settle down. As you breathe in deeply, maybe you can feel your back rib cage expand as well. And as you exhale, let your back rib cage and spine relax, settle. And then letting your breath return to normal. Also at the beginning of a meditation, it's helpful to scan through your body to see if there's any places you can gently relax, soften in your body. Maybe you can relax your belly. Maybe you can soften your legs, the thighs. Softening around the shoulders, the shoulder blades. And this maybe some softening around the jaws and the face, the eyes. Some people, when they practice mindfulness, have such a strong habit of using their eyes to see that they're almost trying to see with their eyes. It's not necessary. If it's easy enough, it's nice to relax the eyes. Let them kind of settle back into the eye socket. Some people find it helpful to almost like imagine that they're looking down backwards into their body. It's relaxing for their eyes to do that. And then within your body, as part of your bodily experience, becoming aware of how the body experiences breathing. What parts of your body move? What sensations come into play as you breathe in and breathe out? Noticing the rhythm of breathing in your body. The movement of the chest or the belly or the sensations of the air going in and out through the nostrils. And if there are thoughts in the background, you can just ignore them if you can keep the attention on the breath in the foreground. If you lose touch with the breathing because you start thinking, then let go of your thoughts and come back to your breathing. As you're mindful of your breathing, notice which you notice more clearly, the experience of breathing in or the experience of breathing out. Which is clear, which is vaguer. And as you're staying here with whatever's with your breath and what's happening, notice if there's commentary about your experience or you're caught up in any commentary. Notice if you have a reaction or a second arrow to what's happening. And it's enough just to notice it and then come back to your breathing. And then now, near the end of the sitting, turn your attention to how you're feeling. What's the mood or emotional state or attitude that seems to be here now? Are you calm or agitated? Relaxed or impatient? Interested or bored? Anxious or peaceful? Aversive, accepting? Sad or happy or whatever your feeling's okay. Take a few moments, whatever you are you're feeling, it might be very subtle what you're feeling. But if you recognize some mood or emotional state that's present for you, very quietly but clearly acknowledge what it is to yourself. You could even name it. A very quiet voice in your mind. Clearly, so you clearly acknowledge this is how it is now. And then if that mood or emotional state is still there, look around your body, scan your body, to see if there's any sensations in your body that somehow correspond or relate to how you're feeling now. Any place in your body that's energized, active? And if there is, very gently bring your attention there, and for a few moments here, just stay present for those sensations in your body, as if it's okay, a permission for them to be that way. Are there any second arrows or commentary? Just let it be as it is, feeling it in your body. And then come back again to your breathing. And just stay simple. One breath at a time, feeling your breath. One more minute, and then we'll end the sitting. And then to end the sitting, you can take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So, from time to time, you will, when you meditate, you'll have emotions that predominate. Some people have a lot of them, and some people don't have a lot. Who knows why? There's, could be have to do with personality, it could have, you know, your own genetics, it have to do with your culture, your family, many reasons why, what's happening in your life that time. But sooner or later, most people will have some strong emotion that comes along when they're meditating. So it can be a pleasant emotion, it can be an unpleasant emotion. When the emotion becomes strong, the task of mindfulness is to turn the attention to it and just be present for it. And as with everything else, there's two lessons, two big lessons to learn. The first lesson to learn is how not to be reactive to it, not to judge it, not to criticize it, not to be for it or against it, but learn that balance of tension that's there. The second lesson with emotions is to learn to trust our emotional life if we can bring this non-reactive attention and presence to it. Every emotion that we have is there for a reason. And so in Buddhism, because it's there for a reason, we have a lot of respect for it. Because it's there for a reason, what we say in Buddhism is that it's not a fixed thing. It's not like you're stuck this way. It's there because of causes and conditions. You don't have to understand those causes and conditions. And the emotion is not the dead end to the cause and the stream of causes and conditions. it's part of a stream of causality, of cause-effect, of unfolding that continues through time, unless we block it, unless we stop it. So, for example, sometimes it's said that resentment is frozen anger. Charlie Brown had good grief, so I suppose bad grief would be frozen grief, to hold down. So a variety of emotions we get locked in, we get stuck in, and so it can't continue to unfold, to be in the stream of cause and effect, causality that's there. The English word emotion comes from Latin, and it has the word motion in it. The E means out in Latin prefix. So to move out is kind of the source of the word. And it points to the idea, I don't know if it was original, the reason for this, but it certainly, not, I like the fact that it seems to point to the idea that emotions are always want to move out. They always want to evolve. They're always in process if we get out of the way and allow them to unfold. And so part of the wonderful thing about meditation practice, it's one of the safest places in the world to allow your emotions to roll through you whatever way they're going to be. And it's safe for a number of reasons. One reason is that you're not going to cause any harm. You're not going to act on them. Because you're committed for the period of meditation to sit upright in the middle of your emotion and be quiet and basically not move. So you can have murderous rage. And maybe in ordinary life, at work or something, it's maybe not such a wise idea to have murderous rage. And so, you probably need to keep it in check a little bit. But in meditation, this is a place where you don't have to repress or deny or judge or push down any emotion at all. And so that's part of the gift of meditation to yourself, is you're allowed to have, to be who you are. You're allowed to have whatever's coming through to come up, provided you don't act on it. So, if you have murderous rage, you don't go punch someone out. You just sit there and allow the feelings to be there. If you have, anything, if you have strong lust, you sit there and you try to be present for it without getting caught up in the story around it, but just to feel it and be there, and trusting that it'll unfold too. Everything unfolds if you get out of the way. You can have strong grief, strong sadness can arise. And the idea is to learn how to be present for it, and let it. And because there's a wisdom in our emotional life, all emotions want to process themselves. All emotions want to move. There was some study I read recently, a year or two ago. I forget what the number was, but it was a ridiculously short period of time. The researchers claimed that every emotion lasts only for, I don't know, I don't remember, maybe a couple of minutes or 15 seconds or something. It was a really short time. It's like, it's not like what we think. I've been depressed and angry for, years. And, it doesn't, I'm just, that's the way I am all day. But actually often what happens is we're constantly reinforcing it, we're renewing it. We're telling ourselves stories that are often re-triggering the same emotion over and over again. And one of the things that we're trying to do in meditation, by not living in the stories, by letting go of the thoughts and just being present for the experience of what it is, we're not re-triggering the emotions. We're not reinforcing and fueling it with the same story over and over again. And it's very powerful, because when we don't tell the same story over again and re-trigger it, then the emotion can go through whatever changes it's going to go through, which, since it's relatively going to be short, it'll pass through somewhat fast. I had a friend who had, I think her father, her brother, and her best friend died in the same year, kind of unexpectedly. So she had this lot of grief. And then she was a meditator. She went on a meditation retreat. And often when there's situations like that, though, kind of personal tragedies, for people who meditate, meditation retreats are a great place to process, to let this kind of be respectful, to allow the feelings to be there in a respectful way and grieve properly. So what she said when she came back from the retreat, she said, the difference between my daily life before the retreat and during the retreat, about grieving, was that when I, at home, these waves of grief would come through me, and they would last for a long time. When I went on the retreat, and I was practicing mindfulness, just being present for what is without the story, and the grief would still come, and it was actually much more intense, she said, but it only lasts for a minute or so. Just come through and go, you know, just come through, like wash through, wash through. So she was, you know, she had done a lot of meditation, so she knew how to get out of the way of her emotions, not to try to fix it or react to it or do anything with it, just kept be present and feel it. And so it moved through pretty quickly. And so meditation is a phenomenal place. It's kind of a, I think of it as a very as a, like a gift to yourself, where you're allowed to be yourself. You don't have to censor yourself. You don't have to be a good Buddhist. You don't have to be, you know, a good anything. You can just be yourself. And if what you're, what's going on is emotions and feelings, you can you have permission here to let whatever it is to come up and be there. Provided that you're mindful of it. You offer this non-reactive presence, this non-judgmental presence, where you keep letting go of your thoughts and the stories and just be there present. So I like to tell the story of many years ago I was teaching a retreat, and there was a woman I'd known for a number of years, kind of a student, and she was a very troubled woman, had a lot of troubles in her life, had a lot of psychological challenges, and was really kind of wrapped up and caught up in her stories, her ideas, her self-identity issues, which is just another story. And so, you know, we were on retreat together. I was a teacher. And then there was about this many people at the retreat, and we were in a room maybe a little bit bigger than this. And it was early. It was November, and I don't know, it was probably around 10 o'clock in the morning. It was a beautiful morning light coming into this lit, peaceful meditation room, very quiet. And there was something magic about that morning. We were all sitting meditating there, and it got really peaceful. It was really, you know, precious how peaceful the whole place got. And right after that, I had my meeting with her, one-on-one meeting, which we do on retreats. And so I went to this, it was in Santa Sabina, it's a convent up in we'd rented up in San Rafael. And so we had this little convent bedrooms, rooms. I love them. I'm a kind of monastic inclined guy. And so we were in almost my little room, and I sat in the chair, and she came into this little monastic cell, and she sat in her chair. And you know, we came directly from that peaceful, peaceful meditation's magic moment. And we sat there, and she was so peaceful, too. It was just so beautiful to see. She was settled. We were just there. It's kind of sometimes when you're really peaceful and settled in the moment, you don't need to say anything. To say anything kind of just messes it up, right? It's just like, so we just sat there. It was so beautiful. Just sat there. We were there and looking at each other. And then I guess we started talking, and we kind of acknowledged what was going on, you know, all this peace and how easy and nice it was. I was so happy for her. Finally, she had some peace. And then she said to me, "Yes, but it wasn't this way yesterday." Yesterday, and she started telling me about yesterday, and it was like this transformation. And within a minute or two, she was, you know, it was like possessed. It was like she was back to being troubled and in conflict, and, you know, everything was hard and difficult. Why did she have to drag yesterday into today? What does yesterday have to do with today? Yesterday is gone, gone, gone. I mean, yesterday is gone as far, you know, I mean, wherever it is that, you know, the Civil War went, that's where yesterday went. You know, and so it was so, for her, she had to bring it back. And I felt really sad. Couldn't she just leave it be, because she was so peaceful and happy at that moment? So part of the art of meditation around emotions is how to not get caught up in the stories, in the second arrows, in the commentary we have. You will have commentary, you will have stories, and we'll talk about that next week when we talk about mindfulness of thinking. But it's really important, if you want to meditate, to appreciate, to understand at least the difference between the stories you tell yourself, the commentary you have, the reactions you have from the primary experience of the emotion that's going on. And that's true for good emotions as well. There's all these stories and ideas we have about them. I've sat in meditation and felt, you know, really peaceful, maybe some joy and delight, and wow, and then the story comes up. And it's actually a story which feels good. It kind of energized me. It's a little embarrassing, right? But I said, Gil, you're doing great. This is great, you know, like, wow. You know, I can't wait to tell anybody. I hope people are noticing. You know, and it's kind of like this, you know, I'm being puffed up and it feels good. And so it's self-reinforcing, you know, and I'm caught, right? And so that can happen that way as well. The idea is to be very balanced, very easy, but whatever's there, to learn how to be easy. Easy with what's difficult, easy with what's not difficult, easy with any emotion we have. Making some sense? Any questions? Or any comments about the meditation we did? Now it's been, you know, it's gone to, that was way back there in the Civil War. Any comments? Okay, so then I'd like to give the core instruction we have for mindfulness of emotions. So in meditation, the kind of we do here, we focus on the breath. If an emotion becomes predominant, if it's just kind of not so predominant in the background, maybe just let it be as it is. You don't have to do anything. But if it comes into the foreground, the emotion, so it's there and kind of wants attention, it's hard to be with the breath because the emotion is kind of pulling your attention, then you can just let go of breathing. And then we turn our attention to the fact that we have this emotion. And how we turn the attention to the emotion, how we address, you know, bring our attention to the emotion or to anything, is part of the art of meditation. Can you bring your attention in a relaxed, calm way? Not be alarmed, not be eager. Just, okay, now I'm going to open and experience this. Can I do that in a calm way? And then to calmly feel the emotion, whatever it is, be present for it. And an important part of this being present for an emotion is to be clear about what it is, to recognize it. And sometimes, some people find it extremely helpful to have what's called a mental note, or label. So if you're feeling happy, to very quietly, calmly say happy. If you're sad, say sad. Maybe say it a few times, sad, sad. Peaceful, peaceful. Irritated, bored, whatever it might be. And there's something about naming it, which is kind of like to take some of the power out of the identification, the way we're caught in it. There's something about clearly stating, this is what it is, that kind of frees us a little bit from it. And I liken it to the old stories of if you name the dragon or something, the dragon loses its power over you. Or in some countries, when I was in, I think it was Morocco, I forget where it was, Northern Africa, people had a birth name, but they wouldn't tell you your birth name. They had another name that they went by, because if you knew the birth name, you had some power over them. And so, you know, names have power. So the power of naming that, of naming the emotion, is it kind of helps us to separate out a little bit from it, so we're not so entangled with it. And so some people find it very useful to name it, so they don't get caught in it. It's helpful to notice if there's a lot of story going around it, meaning making, this means whatever. And so just kind of let the story go as best you can, let it drift off to the background, and stay present for what's actually here. Many of the stories, more often than not, have to do with the past. And you can remind yourself that wherever it happened today, earlier, or yesterday, or last year, or in your high school prom, it's in the, all that stuff is in the same place as the Civil War. You know, it's all stored nicely there. So that might take a little bit the authority that the past has on us. I think it was Sylvia Boorstein had this great line. I think it's become a popular cliche, right? Unless she just picked it up. I learned it from her. Forgiveness is giving up all hope for a better past. So, I don't know if that's what forgiveness is exactly, but the idea that we're looking for, you know, trying to recreate, you had your past, let it be, and then, you know, we go forward from here. And then a very, very useful thing to do when you're spending time being present for emotions is to feel it in your body. Every emotion has a physical correlate, physical manifestation. It's sometimes hard to feel or see if you're not used to it, but we know that because you know, even our language talks about it. You know, we have this, you know, this we get, you know, pit in the stomach or fire in the stomach, or we get contracted, or we hunch over, or we tighten up, or there's a lot of places where we get hot in the face, or our hands get clenched. There's all these places that our emotions get expressed. In fact, you probably wouldn't know what emotion you're having unless you could feel some expression of it in the body. If you feel, you know, happy or compassionate, the body gets soft, warm. The blood flow changes where it goes in the body depending on the emotion. And so there's all the, what gets energized. You know, like, you know, if you're really, I've sat in meditation and just had so much aversion to what was going on that, you know, the way it was expressed was I had this tremendous energy in my legs, just ready to bolt. And so one option, of course, is to bolt. You know, if you want to give in to every impulse you have, then, you'll be busy the rest of your life. But so what I did was I just sat there. And it meditation is like being at the rodeo. You know, you just sit on the saddle. You sit there, and it's hard to sit there sometimes in meditation. That day that I had all this, I just wanted to bolt. I couldn't stand it. You know, that was like a rodeo. You know, I felt lucky to get to the end of the meditation. It looked good from the outside, I'm sure. But I just felt it. And it was kind of interesting. It was kind of fascinating. I got really interested. What's this like, you know? And where's the energy? Where's it coursing? What does it feel like to want to bolt? You know, why do I feel that way? What part of the legs are feeling that? Is it? It's not really the knees. The knees are kind of neutral. It seems like it's more in the muscles of the thighs and all over the thighs, and just kind of feel it and be present. Fear can be in the stomach or in the heart, or anger. The shoulders can be affected. The face can be affected. So all the different places that can be affected by the emotion. So one of the things we do when we bring mindfulness to emotions, it's very helpful, is to find out where you feel it in the body, and then bring your attention to that place in your body. And it's a way of being present for an emotion that gives you an anchor, some place to stabilize your attention around the emotion without kind of drifting around, being kind of amorphous. I'm having an emotion, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of who knows what it is or where it is. And it's a way of, the body is not a story. And so it's also a way to ground yourself out of the story-making mind into something that's much more concrete and immediate. And then it has an added benefit, and that is that, it isn't that the bodily expression of an emotion is like secondary, it's like, you know, that's a symptom of the emotion. What's going on in the body is an integral part of the whole emotional experience. And if you can learn to be present in your body and open up and feel the body part of the emotion, it makes it a lot easier for the emotion to move, to evolve, to do what it needs to do next. And it's quite remarkable to sit down and feel some strong emotion and gently put your attention, and just feel it gently, relaxly, be at ease, and just feel it in the body and just see what happens. Hang out there. What's going to happen? What's going to happen there? Feel it. And so that was one of the things I asked you to do in the meditation at the end, was if you could notice your mood, your emotional state that you might have, could you find it in your body? Was there some place where you could feel it in your body? So I'd like to ask you, see if now you're willing to speak up a little, to say something. What was it, any of you remember now, what was it like at the end of the meditation where I asked you to kind of, for the second time, turn and focus on your emotion and how you're feeling, and to hold it in your awareness, not get involved in the second arrows or commentary, feel it in your body. What happened to some of you? So Shin Kwan here.
I did something a little different this time because I've been trying to understand this technique and following the breath and counting or paying attention to the breath. And it seemed interesting, but also very narrow and dense. And so, and I've been actually feeling a bit irritated the past week. So I thought, the heck with it. I'm just going to go with doing what feels more comfortable. And so, and for whatever reason, it seems as if when I'm attending to the breath without counting, then I feel really nice, like wave, and the whole body just moves, maybe not at the same time with the breath. And it actually is easier for me to pay attention to that. And so my emotion with that and feeling this really nice kind of rocking was just relief at not trying to learn whatever idea I have about this narrow breath. So for what it's worth, that's what I'm experiencing.
Great. So you felt that. So that sense of relief that you felt, what was it like? Could you bring your attention to that and feel it? Or was it just kind of there on the side and you kind of reckon it was kind of nice? And
It was kind of nice, and I was leaving it there, and it's neutral.
That's great.
I like that. Yeah. I don't like feeling irritated, and so I'm exploring as like, oh, there's irritation there. Because usually if something is unpleasant, I'll have a sense of humor with it and totally, you know, it's no big deal. But I'm sort of exploring what's it like to just be irritated, and I just don't like that.
You don't have to like it to meditate with it.
But pardon me?
You don't have to like it to meditate with it.
So that's new for me. I'm understanding that.
Yeah, so yeah. You can put your preferences aside and just be present for it. And so it's okay not to like it, but the idea is to stay and be with it.
So with that, it's a question, is it good practice to stay with that irritation? Because I think that nice, warm, rocking sort of sensation and pulse is, I could do that each time. That would be very easy for me to just go there.
Maybe. It sounds like a more useful way of meditating than what you were doing. let me go through what one way to do it with these instructions. So you're trying to count the breath, and as you do that, you notice you're getting contracted and tight. Something like that, right?
No. It can be interesting, and it can have some sort of an altered state. It's all interesting, and that part is fine. I have not an irritation during the meditation. I mean, during wakefulness, I'm noticing more irritation. In daily life. Okay. Whereas normally, I just have a sense of humor. If there's blurps in the day, I just kind of...
I'm not following you. So the irritation is outside of meditation or in meditation?
The irritation has been outside of meditation a little bit this week. It could be just, you know, I'm not saying that it's associated. I don't know.
So if you have in daily life, if there's a regular emotion that keeps popping up like that, an interesting thing to do is look for a really good irritation when it comes along. An opportunity when you feel it, then sit down quietly by yourself. Go to a park bench or go to the toilet where they leave you alone. And then sit there and then do the mindfulness of the irritation meditation. So we're, you know, just feel it as it is. Notice if you have judgments about it or second arrows and see if you can put those aside. And then see if you can find where the irritation is in your body. And then just try to be present for it. And see how it unfolds for you as you do that.
Okay. I was also noticing a real-life example in San Francisco last week when there were so many people and with the Blue Angels and everything. The lines for the restroom were humongous. And I was waiting for a very, very long time. It dawned on me that it was no big deal waiting in line, and I don't know if it was a cultural thing or whatever, but I'm looking at everybody in this long line, and nobody seems to be reactive to it. It's just that women are used to this, and they know there's going to be a lot of people. And so I sort of was thinking about that in with the mindfulness and thought maybe that's just I mean, we all have our choices in how we're going to feel in a moment, and I thought that that was just interesting.
Yeah, the choices of how we feel in the moment are important to address, to look at. So in a situation like that, waiting in line where there's no other choice, perhaps, there's no bushes and, you know, you know, this got to do it, right? So so then why add second arrows?
Yeah, that I was meaning that was it, the second arrow thing.
So then learning how, and it's a powerful thing to learn not to have second arrows, because sometimes these second arrows are kind of second nature to have, and they come so, and they have so, come with so much authority, and, you know, so we get caught up in it.
Mine's a little opposite. I think over many years I've used a relaxation technique that's the breathing technique we're using now, and that has been primarily to empty myself, just to be thoughtless. So when you came to the point of saying what emotions are you experiencing, I thought, oh, am I supposed to have some? Am I supposed to find something I'm anxious about? So I've just had a bit of a revelation that there's some intent to have a subject which I would meditate on, that something would come up that I need to be open to.
Yeah, I'm not quite following, but see, every waking moment, maybe sleeping moment too, every waking moment, there is a mental state or emotional state that's present. And it could be subtle, and it could, you know, and the example you gave, I think you said being anxious about something, as if that's what you're supposed to have when you have an emotion. You could feel settled, you could feel content, you can feel calm, you could feel at ease and easy. Those are also emotional states or mental states, moods that are there. And so, if your mind is getting kind of empty and quiet of thoughts, certainly there's some kind of emotional state there. So the idea is, we usually only look for it when it's predominant, when it's, you know, really strong. But this was an exercise: look and see what you could find. But there's always going to be something there. There are some people who are not very emotionally literate or are not so open to their emotions or have kind of dampened themselves down a little bit and don't have a habit of paying attention to their emotional landscape. And then it's useful to kind of do it as an exercise to kind of actively look to be more emotionally literate or open up to that realm to see what wants to come out and what wants to be there if we're not kind of ignoring it. Yes, behind Shin Kwan.
So you, in the meditation, you asked us to look at our emotions twice, one at the beginning of the meditation and one at the end.
Yes.
And at the end, I noticed that my emotions had settled down. They weren't as intense. But that my body was in pain more, and it was as if the emotions had sort of settled into to my body.
It's possible. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you're not used to meditating like this, the 15 minutes we sat, it's very easy. There can be some body pain that would come, and there's no connection to the emotion. It's just, you know, you settle down emotionally, and at the same time, your body started getting tired of the posture. That's one possibility. Another possibility that happens is that as people relax, as they settle down, I'll say it this way first, that chronically tense muscles go numb. And as the body relaxes, the muscles relax, they wake up. And as they wake up, for a while they can hurt more. They feel the tiredness, the tension of holding so much. And so some people, as they meditate, will think, I'm going backwards, I'm getting more tense. I was less tense before. They're not getting more tense, but rather they're waking up. Those muscles are waking up, and you're seeing what's there. And it's better to wake up to it than to stay numb. So that's one thing, possibility. The other is sometimes because of the story-making mind, being caught up in the emotions, the intensity of it all, Some people focus so much on the emotion, so much a story connected to the emotion. It's kind of like putting blinders on. And we don't see the consequence of walking around with very strong emotions. And once, and the physical consequences, like the tension, how we hold ourselves, they actually are, it takes longer for those to relax and unwind sometimes in the emotion. So you might have settled in your body and no longer being preoccupied by them. And then you start to become more sensitive to the cost of carrying those emotions around for so long. And so the body, the remnant in the body is still there. And that's why you become aware of the pain. And then we say that that's okay. It's good, actually. It's a healing thing to bring this gentle, mindful attention to that kind of discomfort in your body, the legacy of your emotions. And because bringing attention to anything is kind of like giving it room to unwind. It's kind of like giving a breathing room to something. And so everything wants to unwind in a sense. And so to feel your pain in your body with attention and awareness gives it room for something to begin happening there that can't happen if you ignore it. Does that make some sense? Okay. So one more thing. I saw one more.
So at the beginning of the meditation, I felt when I guess you asked us to notice our emotion, and what I felt was sadness, and it was like in my chest, and I felt like as I was meditating, I was thinking it feels like it's like someone puts a lemon in your mouth, and you really want to like pucker or cry or something. Like I really wanted to just like squeeze it and get it, but I didn't know how to do that, so I just breathing, and then eventually it passed, and then I started getting drowsy, as I often do. So by the second time when you asked what our emotional state was like, I'm like half asleep.
So then the interesting thing to do is to be mindful of sleepiness. Bring attention to sleep. And sleep is kind of an interesting phenomenon. I mean, this time of day, a lot of us are sleepy. So it's reasonable. But it's also, what's very interesting with sleeping, I think I said this the other day, right? That sometimes in meditation, if we're on the edge of some strong emotion coming up, because in meditation, as you relax in meditation, the unresolved things sooner or later will come up. And so some of those unresolved issues sometimes are grief or anger or different things. And if they're kind of intense, what's lying under the surface, a very common phenomena for people is to fall asleep so they don't have to face it. And so sometimes by turning attention to the sleepiness and feel, that's what's the predominant thing going on, and in this non-reactive way, just feel the sleepiness in your body and being present for it. If there's something there that needs to come forth, it has a chance then to come forth and show itself. So, right. So because you said sadness and sadness went away, and it got sleepy, so I wonder if there's more to that sadness that's there. And that sleepiness maybe was... Okay. Should we... You want to do another meditation? Maybe 10 minutes or so? Yeah? So if you want to stand and stretch, just because you're, for the sake of your body, please do. So if you are sleepy, it's good to sit up straighter, perhaps. And another option you have if you're really sleepy is to keep your eyes open. Maybe half open, pointing down about 45 degrees to the floor. Sometimes by keeping the eyes open, it's a little easier to stay alert. And then you can begin by taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. If you are sleepy, sometimes breathing maybe a little bit faster, that those deeper breaths, or fast, a little bit faster or something, can be a little bit energizing at the beginning. Breathe out maybe a little bit more forcefully if you're really tired. And then letting your breathing return to normal. And then if it's easy enough, see if you can let yourself be at ease. Be at ease with what is, how you are. Be easy. Ease up. There's no need to be for or against anything that's happening right now. For the time of the meditation, it's not about for or against, it's about being present. Making room for your experience. In a sense, making room for yourself. As you are is completely okay in meditation. And then bring your attention to your breathing, the movement of your body as you breathe, the sensations, breathing in, breathing out. Wherever you are right now is fine. And if it's possible, the middle of who you are and how you are, as if it's the ground or the support, the foundation, and everything else is in the periphery, let yourself be with your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Coming back to your breathing whenever you lose it. If it's easy enough to relax, something about how you are, so it's you can be more accepting of what is. See if you can relax. Relax in your brain, in your heart. Here you are. breathing in and breathing out. So that you can be more at ease sitting here. What is going on for you that you need to be more accepting of? If there's anything going on in your body, physical sensations, if there are any sounds, if there are any emotions or moods or mental states that you're experiencing that make it difficult to be with your breathing, if you're tired, it makes it difficult to be with breathing, turn your attention to clearly and fully acknowledge that. Recognize it, feel it. if you are telling yourself stories, commentary, acknowledge that's what's going on and either let go of it or see if you can let it recede to the background and come back to the breathing, letting the breathing be the foreground of this moment, breathing in and breathing out. And then to end this sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Feel your body. Feel your chair or your cushion. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So I hope that what I've said about mindfulness of emotions is given you a little bit of sense of how it's like to practice with emotions, to include them as part of the meditation, rather than excluding them or having no place for them. For me, or what I believe is that meditation is a really important place in people's lives. Very place to really be deeply respectful of our inner life, what goes on for us. It's a place to make space and room for the fullness of who we are, all the aspects of who we are, not to try to push something away or make something, fix something quickly, but really kind of to be present in a respectful way. And the way I like kind of words, the word respect is a great word for mindfulness because it's a kind of, because the word respect literally means in Latin to look again, like spectacle, you know, the spect part. And re is again, to look again. And so that the essence of respect is to be able to be willing to look again, look more carefully. What is this? Get to know it. And so that's what we're doing in mindfulness. We're trying to look again, to look more carefully, look respectfully. A respectful attitude to all things that come up for us, that arises for us, the cause and conditions that manifest for us in the moment, and to be present for it. And it's so radically different to do that from how most people live their lives, where we're constantly reacting, responding, commentary, story, arrows, Some people have great archers. Some people have really big shields, really heavy shields. They're weighed down by their shields, and they think they're safe, but you know they can hardly budge. To not have any shields, not have any arrows, and so the process of just showing it's so radically different from how most people live their lives. So just simply show up and let mindfulness take the lead. Just let's be present. Let's be present for this and not be for and against it, but respect it and see what's going to happen. See what unfolds if I'm just there for it. And you always come in meditation, you always come back to your breathing. One of the functions of coming back to your breathing is to help you get out of your own way. Because if you're staying with the breath carefully, it's hard to, the more you're careful you are with the breath, the more continuous you are with your breathing, the less mental energy and effort can be directed towards commentary, judgments, reactions, arrows, all the other stories that we make, all the other things. And we just be with what is, allow things to be as they are, and not interfere. It's a beautiful thing to do. So I hope that's clear. There is a handout, a yellow one today, for this third week. And it has a little description of the instructions, some information about mindfulness of emotions, and then some exercises or practices you can do at home. And then you probably have lots of opportunities to, in your daily life as well, not just in meditation, to look at emotions. I used to do a wonderful, I thought it was a really fun exercise, emotion exercise, on the freeway, which was, I would pay careful attention, you know, the alternatives were often not that good, so, in my mind, so this was a good thing to do, was I would pay very careful attention to what emotions would come up, and the subtlety of the, you know, I might have a general mood that I was in, but there was all these little emotions that would come and go as I was driving down, like I'd see this really nice car, and this desire would arise, and then this car in front of me would be really slow and I'd be irritated, and then the car would cut me off and be angry, and then the police car behind me and I was afraid, and you know, just like, you know, just, you know, every car, it seems like, you know, if I paid really careful attention, like every car, I'm capable of having an emotional response. And you know, mostly I'm not paying much attention to it because I'm having more important things to think about. But what's useful about paying attention to the subtle movements of the mind, subtle reactions we have, is that they might seem inconsequential in them, in and of themselves. But if we get caught up in them, this little bit, Buddha said, drop by drop, the water jug is filled. Drop by drop, the bathtub is filled. One little moment of tension seems inconsequential. But if you have those little moments of tension throughout the day, building and building and building, at the end of the day, you can be really tense. So by learning to pay attention carefully to the subtle movements that go on, the kaleidoscope of emotions that arise and pass, you might be much easier to stay relaxed about it all. So you might try the freeway meditation if that's interesting for you. The point is being that if the more you can get familiar with your emotional world, emotional landscape, the easier it's going to be to do the instructions, understand the instructions for mindfulness of thinking. And it's very common for most people, many, many people who meditate, that one of the things that makes the most difficult to meditate is their thinking. Those of you, you know, hopefully you've been patient waiting till the fourth week. But then next week we'll give the instructions for how we include thinking as part of the meditation rather than struggle with it. Or rather than, you know, sometimes we don't just let go of it, we actually turn and bring mindfulness to it in a particular way. So that's for next week. And then the next week, the fifth week, we won't meet because I have another event I have to go to. And then we'll skip 1 week, the fifth week, and then this, we'll come back for the last class. But we will meet next week for emotions. Okay, so thank you. For thoughts. So, great, thank you.